Florida and Massachusetts.
Georgia. Back to Ohio.
Well, what do you... Now, you know, my family came from Europe and we worked in the cities, and I ended up working in the shop with my dad. You know, my dad was a carpenter and made countertops and stuff. So that was sort of our experience. And if we wanted a job up until like the 60s, you know, you could more or less go around and work in a shop or a mill. Or my dad's working on his own now. But what was it like farming? I mean, was it typical to move around, or was it... see, the reason my people never went into farming was because the machines cost too much, and so did the land. So all they got was like day labor, and then they worked their way up off the streets with day labor. I don't know anything about farming, I mean, in that sense. I mean,
well, but basically, I think the basics on that question there, on their moving about, would have been cheaper land.
Better land.
Better land.
Because they had, I know that some of my relatives, they had land, and it was not real good. And they moved around. They finally moved to Middlefield, Ohio, where there was, they heard there was good land there from Daniel Miller, one of the first ones that moved there. They found out that this land was better, and so they moved there for the good land, and they had much better land. Of course, not like in the Hartville area, they have better land, better soil than what they have in the Middlefield area. So they moved around for better land.
Well, people moved out of that area into the Hartville area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Hartville.
Because of the better soil. It's got a lot to do with the soil that didn't, for them moving. Of course, to begin with, when they came from the foreign countries, like my parents came from Switzerland, and
not your parents.
Not my parents. My great grandpa came from Switzerland in 1764. Mm. And but they moved for freedom of religion. That's why they came. That's why a lot of them came from over there.
Where'd your great grandfathers go to here in the States?
I'm not sure where they moved to begin with. I think Kansas is where they were first. And then they moved around. Some of them went into Indiana. And my, the Schrocks, they went to the Middlefield, Ohio area. So I don't know really where all. Some of them in Holmes County, and they're scattered all over now.
And when everybody was farming, was this, now I'm not, again, you know, schooling this to know, this was certainly not mechanized. This was just all animal and plow and that sort of
wow.
stuff.
Wow.
Just
the old way.
Yeah.
They didn't have a lot of tools to haul with them.
On my dad's side, I still have one at 11, but one just passed away. They lived in Georgia, where they raised cotton, and she would go out there in the field and pick cotton.
Yeah, right, yeah.
For today, it's all done by machine. My dad was in World War I, and he was in Augusta, Georgia. And after he got out of that, he came into where my grandparents lived, which was Cernsey, Georgia. And he bought a grist mill and a shingle mill in the fellow. He lived there then total 6 years, I guess. They cleared land. They raised watermelon. After you clear land in Georgia, the best crop to put in it is watermelon. They always do good, or melon, period. And they had the nicest and the sweetest melon that you could find. they put them on a train right there in Searcy, Georgia, and thinking they would get a return out of it only months later, some months later, get a bill to, because the Millens got bumped around on the
train.
Switches. They didn't direct ship them there, you know. Took a long time to get them. By the time they got to their destination, they were spoiled. And so they had to pay for that. This is one reason they moved out of Georgia, is they were, it was just flat broke. They had to go somewhere to where they could survive. And that is one reason that the Whitmers went into the Hartville.
Sometimes someone not long ago told me, and I was trying to think while he was talking, who it was that told me how her dad was sent somewhere to find a new place, and he chopped his way around to get through to make a path where he wanted to go. And he went, and he was gone for weeks before he came back and had a new place found and a place cleared and ready for to bring the family. Yeah, that's kind of the way a lot of them did. They just went and looked. They didn't know where they were going to or where they were getting. Well, they found a place. The horses and wagons and their families and some stable food, and they didn't live like we live now. It was dried beans and dried corn and
no microwaves?
No, they didn't. The sun was their microwave, I guess. Well, they did one thing in the sun when they had milk. They put the milk out in the sun and let it get sour, and they made cheese. And that's still one thing I like to do. Make cheese. I made some here some time ago, and told me here a couple days ago that I'm going to have to make cheese again. But I like a nice hot sun. You put my milk out in the sun and let it get sour, and then I bring it in and, you know, heat it slowly on the stove so that it makes curds, and then I put it in a cloth and let it drain.
My grandmother used to make yogurt, and I still see it in my mind's eye where she would hang the cheesecloth from the, she used to have metal cabinets in the, where she used to live. She used to have these bags just hanging from the metal cabinets onto the counter and let them drip in the bowl. And I just see them in my mind's eye as a kid, and I could never understand what grandma was making, you know. And that's how she used to make yogurt. She used to make it that way, but it was real thick. It was real tart. It was not like what you go get out of the Dan containers.
No. And the cheese that I make isn't like you buy the cottage cheese you buy in the store either. It's different.
Yeah, my grandmother used to make, we were from Greece, so my grandmother used to make a lot of things out of lamb, you know. Mm-hmm. So I remember one time I was a little kid, and she was in her sink, and I couldn't see into the sink, and she was hitting away with a little hammer. So I couldn't see what she was doing, you know. And I said, "What are you doing, Grandma?" And she said that she was making lamb, you know, so I could never understand it. I got older, and I can still see this is the one I can really see. She's pounding away on this lamb's head in the sink. And I said, "What are you doing, Grandma? What are you doing?" And she says, "Well, that's how you clear all the sinus passages in the head, you know." And she'd run water, and she'd bang it a few times, and because she didn't want to crack it open, because they baked the heads, and then they would crack it open and eat all the meat and stuff in the brain. This is a real delicacy, you know, from the old country. But I never, after I saw that, I never went near any one of those. Again, I know it's sort of...
turned you on.
Yeah, that I'll eat the rest of it, but I've never eaten a head since then.
Yeah. Never been in Greece?
Yes, sir. Number of times. Yeah, that's a real... when they butcher animals, since I never knew, you know, I'm from Chicago, you know, so I would never... you know, the only animal I ever saw was a pigeon, you know, and a dog. And when I saw the butchers work over there, boy, oh boy, they were like surgeons. They would just... The animal would unfold. It wasn't like they were cutting anything. The animal would just, like, fall apart. And that's the first time I ever saw roosters fight with cats for the scraps. Now, I thought that a cat would beat a rooster. I mean, I don't know. I was a bird, you know, this is what I thought. And they're pretty mean, those animals over there. They're not like, you know, they're no house pets in Greece at all. But those roosters would get up in the air with their wings and they hit their claws, you know, and they beat those cats every single time when they wanted a piece of meat. That, and I never knew, that's the other thing, I never knew that chickens would eat meat. I don't know what they ate. I mean, you know, I thought corn, you know, I watched TV, you know, what do I know, you know? But they would just, so I saw, and the animals were real, they don't, I don't think they're intentionally, I've read this a number of times, I don't think that the Greek people are intentionally mean to animals, but they work them. And they have to have control over, especially the horses. So if that horse is not doing what the man wants it to do, I mean, he hits that horse. And there's no, like, he's not trying to, like, be nice or anything. He hits it. And it doesn't bring blood onto it and doesn't hurt it, but knows how to really whack that animal. And just, I've seen him do it. And, boy, it's like, you can hear that sound from a distance. Mm-hmm. And it was just a matter of controlling the animals. It was sort of unsettling for me because, you know, I was young kid, you know, and I had never been, I was there, I went to the village, you know, where my family was from, and that's knee deep in animals, and so that was something that I've never forgotten. And now that I go back, I don't spend that much time over there in the village because I, you know, that kind of stuff is still, you know, a single family can have 300 or 400 sheep, so it's like, you know, you can't, you know, and you can't walk the same speed that a man would walk because you'll tire the animals, which I never, you know, all this stuff came to me when I was over there, I had no knowledge. And they don't have cows the way we have because they use up too much feed and stuff because the land won't support it. But the goats will eat anything and the lambs will graze because they can move them around. So they do like a lot of this, what they call transhuman, which I guess they move from place to place. And they know how to pick out the grasses and stuff. And they're real sharp. I mean, you know, they see things that I'm not able to discern because they're, that's how they make their living.
Being raised in Chicago, you was nigger. Or in the city of the largest dockyards I've seen.
Yeah, sure. We go on the south side in the wintertime, especially, and watch them slide basically the hogs off the trains. You know, and that was sort of funny because, you know, if you've ever seen a hogs hit ice, boy, that's really something.
Yeah.
And they were able to tell when the hogs would have worms in them. I don't know how you do that, but they were able to know. And those are the ones they'd slaughter outside. So, and they were just like gobs. It was like spaghetti. I mean, the worms were just like spaghetti in a house. They were flat, too, I think. They weren't round. I don't remember them being round. We used to go down there as kids. But they would never kill the animals outside because that was against the law. But when they would have the worms and stuff, then they'd take them outside and whack them and just be done with it. I remember when I was a kid, my Uncle George still had a car with a running board. And I went with my grandmother downtown. As a matter of fact, my other grandmother, the one that's passed away. And she picked a lamb out. Man turned his axe around and hit it right in the head and killed it on the spot, right in front of me. I must have been 4 or 5, because I remember this, like, right in front of me, and hung it right up and was butchering it. And I don't remember much more than that, but I don't remember the butchers in Chicago, the Greek butchers, being as good as the ones I saw in the village, because they were just like, I mean, it was like surgery. They were just, the animals would literally unfold, and they keep the various parts of the animal, they use all the parts of the animal, and the, I guess it's the membrane that keeps it surrounds the flesh, you know, so that it's like in compartments, sort of. They take that membrane out and they make medicine out of it with herbs and stuff. And they make salves and they use, they're real into herbs and stuff. They have like stores in Greece that are just, when they have a store for it, you know, that's just all for herbs and stuff. They know how to do curing with it in the sense of medicine. And they sort of outlawed a few things because they don't now think that that's the right thing to do, but still the old people, and the people in the villages still do it too. And there'll always be older ladies or older men in the town that they know are cures for that kind of stuff. And they go to them, and they're real respectful of these people. They're real, like, they got a lot of clout, a lot of respect. And they'll go to them, and they'll walk up to them in a coffee shop and really treat them fine and buy them coffee and talk to them real respectful for a while. And then they'll say, well, you know, by the way, you know, this and that and all. And a real secret of, I was never able to find out. I knew some stuff from here, seeing the older people, and I would talk about them. They were very interested in it. They'd ask me what exactly they did, and I was able to spell it out for them because I just hadn't had my mind that way for that. And they were very good. And I'd ask them a few things, and they would tell me stuff, but they were real secretive. They didn't want to, that was their business, I guess, and they didn't want to lose it. But they were real surprised that I knew certain things. And I said, well, you know, in Chicago, they were just, the older ladies didn't keep it the way they did. It was not a secretive thing. They just tell you, you know. And they sort of had like mystical beliefs too. They had a thing called the evil eye that they were always worried about. And that sort of thing would go on. So. But we never had, you know, we lived in a, my dad was a carpenter and we used to live over the shop. So it wasn't, and it was in a part of the city. So we weren't allowed to burn couldn't burn any fire in the city. You couldn't keep animals in the city. Now, when my dad was growing up, they could burn fires, you know, in their backyard and cook in their backyard. They could keep goats and chickens, small farm animals, no large animals, in the city limits. And then after a while, they stopped that. So it was like, you know, we had the big
it's
fire.
Like there. Everywhere else, they stopped it. Yeah.
Some of that I don't really agree with. And I was in Maine several years ago, and they had stopped the smaller egg producers, the farmers, from working, and they'd all worked the law so that there were two big producers of eggs and stuff. And then all the small farmers sold all their stuff and their equipment and were working in the basically these factories for the, or in these, you know, they had like long buildings where they would have the chickens and stuff. And when I went there, everything was abandoned because these two guys finally pulled out, and the whole industry just bellied under. And these guys just couldn't go back to chickens. They said, well, you know what it cost to, you know, buy a whole bunch of chickens and then do this and do that. And some of them had, but it wasn't like where every farm, you know, where every house had them. So a lot of things are changing. I mean, you know, I've never seen the things that I know a lot of other people have. It's just the world's moving real fast.
You know, we used to have some people from Cleveland that come out to our farm. I, as a young girl, couldn't understand that these children, their children, had never seen a cow. They'd seen pictures, but never a live cow. And other animals, they'd come out quite often to see how we milk, see all the different things that go on the farm. And a lot of children, many children in the towns, don't have that privilege.
Well, the thing I was thinking about, I was talking to this man, Mr. Kersey, when we were flipping cows over, you know, so we could geld them and stuff. I said, well, you know, this is what my family ran away from the old country to get away from, you know. And I know that my grandparents very much, I know that some of my cousins now that came in the 50s, they won't eat chicken. And so, like, one thing I said to this guy, Bill, you know, he works in a grocery store, he's no big shot, you know. I said, what do you mean you won't eat chicken? You know, like he was having crab and steak ribs in the house for a party. And I said, what do you mean you won't eat chicken? You know, if they had chicken there, I would pass some plates around. Got to be kidding me, you know. No, he says, you know how many chickens I had to chase? You know how many chickens I had to take care of? He says, you ever have to, you know, they do have these little buildings, I mean, like small, like, you know, what we would call like an odd house here. They keep chickens all in there, like on, you know, sticks and stuff, you know. And he'd have to take a little shovel, and I don't mean like, you know, that we buy at the store, but I mean one they make, you know, to clean out the chicken manure so that, you know, they keep them rolling, you know. And he says, boy, I'm never going there. And he says, couldn't have a good thing to say about chickens. And my dad, when he was a boy, they'd gone back to live in the old country. And he said that the best part of the chicken was the chicken claw. They had like little meat right in here. And he says that pad was the best part. And I remember that I was talking to some guys who worked in Africa, you know, because I'm an anthropologist and I've worked in Greece. So we both agreed that the best chicken we ever ate, you know, is chicken, was garbage-fed chicken. I mean, those guys in the villages, they weren't buying no feed. I mean, they'd have feed, you know, in case things went bad, they used it. But basically, they had scraps and, you know, cut up from the onions and just... there was no garbage. There was just, that was the, you know, they go out there and feed the animals. And then they throw feed in there, but, you know, I mean, it was all just very, they're very particular about how much went out. And,
oh, yeah, I used to, and we did it at home, too. When we peeled potatoes, we boiled those potato peelings and mixed them with some of the chicken feed we had. And Dad would grind our own chicken feed and corn and oats and stuff together. We'd cook these peelings and then we'd stir some of that in, feed in, and give it to the chickens. We'd make kind of a, have kind of a trough and we'd pour it in there. All of the chickens, they'd come, they'd just go out for it.
Mm-hmm.
They just loved that in the winter. And we'd throw some scraps into them too, but we mostly used to potato peelings.
Yeah, the other thing was, I was a real greenhorn over there. I was saying like what the breed was on the chicken, you know. So I can speak, you know, pretty good Greek, you know. I mean, I can get my, like I'm saying to you now, you know, I can get that. It was kind of used for us. The guy's looking at me like, what? I said, well, you know, it's a chicken. Yeah, I know it's a chicken, but it's got no color, you know. I mean, it's like got all colors, you know. I mean, I know that chickens are white, chickens are black, you know. I mean, at least I knew that. You know, there were types of chickens, you know. And I said, I'd seen them in other parts of Greece. What kind of chicken? Well, they didn't know, you know. And they said, well, you know, so then he said to me, wait, what color do you think the egg is? I said, well, it's either white or it's brown. And it was brown, but it all had speckles in it, you know. So these were like real chickens from the old days, you know. Or, I mean, you know, this was like, these weren't sorted breeds, you know. This was just game bird, as it were.
Game bird, yeah.
And their dogs were the same way, too. I was asking about their dogs, because their dogs were herd dogs, and they were mean animals. This was not anything to get near. This was no puppy dog on their lap kind of thing. And I always stayed away from them. And the only consistent color they had was like a black dog, a sort of like a black dog. And just mean, mean, mean. And again, there was no, they were about a 35-pound animal, you know, they were like a street dog, you know, curly tail. And they were good at herding and would follow, you know, whistle commands and stuff, and real good. But God, you get anywhere near them and you weren't the right person, boy, you were in real trouble. You were in real trouble. I held a couple off with my, like, you know, I got this camera case and I was doing the same kind of work, you know, there. And I had animals on my camera case, you know, that were real mean. I didn't mean to take up all your time here with my stories of Greece, too.
Well, it's interesting.
Glad to come and visit with both of you. Were you able to find that man, Mr. Simon, or has he left the state, or do you know? Or?
No, Does
he know where he is?
Yeah.
I know where he is, but is he at home by himself, or does he stay with someone?
This is Sarasota, Florida. I'm with the Whitmers. This is take two.
This guy wants to talk to Simon. We need Simon back. Has he got a telephone number? Under
Kurtz, let me just put in the car. I need to get one thing to.
Tell him this. I haven't thought about anyone coping your growth yet. No, I'm more than a taker. What? I don't know. And I don't know how to get a hold of him. Jake Hirschberger. Neil.
Mrs. Whitmer. How are you related to Loretta?
Well, his parents live over here on the Gardenia.
But how are you, her aunt?
Oh, her mother.
Next to Roman Claiborne.
I see.
Next to...
That's right. Okay.
I worked to lock her. I helped her when she started her store at the other place.
Chris Peterson built. he was living there years ago, a painter.
Then our daughter got in her house and they started up the restaurant. Uh-huh. So I worked at the, was cashier at the restaurant. From there,
what you got running over there?
Whenever I have, she needs somebody to work in between, you know, she doesn't have someone to help her. Now I'm working down here.
Loretta's
store is.
There's a grocery store, that's right. Yeah, she said, is that, so then is that your children's place?
Daughter.
Your daughter's place, that's right, yeah.
So I work there,
I thought you was wrong on that 25 stuff.
I like to work.
23 and 24.
I could find plenty of things here to do.
Yeah.
I've got loads of material I could make all kinds of quilts and do all kinds of things if I put my mind to it. That didn't do the word work.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom works with my dad.
I
can't hear you. Hang on. Call me back. Yeah.
Did you find out? Were you?
Yeah. Lived between Trinidad and Jamaica. Unit 102. His phone number is 924. 3947.
And his name is Simon?
Simon Hertz, K-U-R-T-Z. Yeah. No, it's not a bit better. No. The Tintaga wagon? Yeah. Is that where it's in? Oh. Oh.
Yeah, but I looked a little bit there. What am I supposed to do with this?
Say hello.
He had that book out there. I thought maybe it would be in there. I looked a little bit, but I didn't see it. So. That's all. Probably all the information you want.
Is he on there yet?
I guess. I didn't shut him off. Are you still on? Oh. No, he handed it to me and I didn't think he wanted to talk to me. I don't know. Whenever he runs out of something to say, he hands me the receiver. Yeah, he's got the book. What?
Yeah, okay.
Page 78.
Yeah, okay.
Boy, I'll tell you. That's really service now. Okay, are you done?
It starts before yeah. That.
Are you talking? Are you done talking to him?
Yeah. I'm
okay.
Done.
All right, fine. Page 78.
Yeah. Okay. You wondered what a real speed wagon looked like.
We got photos and everything.
Oh, there.
Chapter 8. Rio Speedwagon. R-E-O. Oh, R-E-O Speedwagon.
Rio, not Rio.
Yeah, R-E-O. There's
I thought too he said Rio and I couldn't figure out what
Rio.
You were talking about.
Rio.
Rio.
This is from Conestoga Wagon to Modern Times. It's by W.J. Overholt. And it's called From Conestoga Wagon to Modern Times, The Eventful Life of W.J. Overholt. It's printed in the United States by Englewood Press, Route 2, Box 182, Seymour, Missouri, 65746. And it doesn't give the year of publication. It's, okay, but Chapter 8... This book must be 1981, 1982. Chapter 8. Chapter 8 says REO or Rio Speed Wagon Tour to Miami, Florida, winter of 1923-1924. Mm-hmm. And that starts on page 78. And it goes to page 91.
Will Overholt was one of them.
Yeah, it's got a picture of the group here. It's Canton, Ohio plates, T127-179. It says Ohio 1924.
Uh-huh.
And the caption on the picture says, left a truck, Mose, Kurtz, Levy, or Levy?
No, Levi.
Levi, and the last name is pronounced, sir?
Slabaugh.
And that's spelled S-L-A-B-A-U-G-H on seat, Martin Overholt, and Jerome Overholt. So it's got them down there as four.
There's a better picture of
them. It's just a little bit ago.
Do you know that there is a rock and roll group called REO, or it's called, that's what it's called, that's what they call themselves, REO Speedwagon?
Oh.
See, this is
the tent they had,
yep.
Page 80.
All right, here's a bunch. This is the whole bunch. Right here, 2, 4, 6 of them.
That's right.
All right, left is Levi Slabaugh, W.J. Overholt. Oh, wait a minute. I know better than that. Left is Levi.
Maybe they're starting here?
Yes, Skip. This is Mose Kurtz, any way you look at it. And this is John Overholt right here. And this is Martin Overholt. And this is W.J. Overholt.
It's supposed to be the skipper of the boat. And then Levy.
Probably.
And this
that's
is on
skipper, that's,
that's in Tarpon Springs, Florida.
W.J. Overholt, that's him right there. That's the one that wrote this book.
It's the third man from the left.
Yeah, right there. And this Kurtz, Mose Kurtz, he's a brother to Simon. And Simon's still living, Mose isn't. Mm-hmm. He just passed away a year ago.
This is on page 84. There's a picture of men holding a bunch of fish by the gills. And the paragraph above, as Mr. Whitmer was looking at it, trying to identify the individual men here, I mean, according to how his memory worked versus what the, how the caption exactly reads, I was looking at the paragraph at above, and they caught these fish in Tarpon Springs. It says, we stopped at Tarpon Springs on the Gulf about 35 miles north of Tampa. Here we visited a sponge industry that was doing a big business. Divers went to the bottom of the Gulf to cut the sponges. They were having a sponge exhibition demonstrating the process of getting the sponges ready for market. We learned that it was an annual affair. We were very happy to get in on a free fish fry. We felt we got, quote, our money's worth plus, end quote, out of the deal. And it says, next paragraph, near Tarpon Springs, we chartered a party fishing boat that took us 10 miles out in the Gulf. We hit it just right, as the fishing was really good. We caught about 300 pounds of grouper and red snapper, with Jerome catching the biggest one. And that's the photo here. So there they were in Tarpon Springs. Life is such a big circle. You think this book is still available? Who can say? Let me just write down the address of the place.
This is Overholt. Might have booked that.
Stoker Wagon. To Modern Times.
We had several of them. What did we do with them?
Wayne got one. Three one of the kids.
Yeah. Jane. Well, not all of them got any. I don't think. I think Jimmy and Kenny.
Mm-hmm. USA. Right. Well, I can order right from this. I'm sure this press must have.
Yeah, you could probably order from there. She doesn't have any here, but they would probably have some.
Is there a store in town that might carry them, do you think?
No.
No, there was a limited amount of them that we did. She may have some on hand.
Well, she might, or who's that address to? That's the publisher.
Yeah, and then...
Another address?
No, there's... That's it, there's not even a date of... No. Mm-hmm. All it does say is Lester Gingrich.
Gingrich.
Did the forward. Mm-hmm. Is he a pastor in town?
Mm-hmm. Lester Gingrich. The one that... Huh?
I don't know.
He's a minister here? In Sarasota? Oh, I don't know.
It's 258 pages in this book. It's hardback.
66, 22. Yeah, W.J. Overholt was the first cousin of my daddy.
He went to Bombay, India.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Bombay, India.
Yeah, they went.
He went
on a trip.
Oh, Anna May.
Well,
oh, I love sisters. Good. You know, maybe you... is there any... This is Willis Whitmer. Okay. Is there any books that your dad had printed? Oh, you do? Okay. Where's the best place to find him? Okay. Are you going to be around? You was living there, maybe?
Gotta check my family resources here now before I got more back home, but I just
Will Overholt started this rest home that's on here in Bay Vista.
That's fine. That's excellent, sure.
He's not living anymore. The main one in that book.
Oh, I see. I see.
This is it's the 6th of January, 1987. That's right, Sarasota.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if he wants to stop in and get one or...
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he said he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How's she doing? How old is she now? 87. Mm-hmm. Up and around, cooking and...
Steve Frangos.
Steve Frangos is his name. Would you go out now?
Sure, if they want. Sure. I'll just drive right there now. It's okay with them.
He would like one of these books. He's could I say historian?
Yeah, it's okay.
He's kind of a historian and wants to get some of the things together and Maybe your mother could answer some questions for you. You know.
Well, if it's too late, I can always do it tomorrow.
She'll be there.
Well, I'll get better.
Yeah, tomorrow in the morning.
For her, I'm sure.
Tomorrow. Okay, what would be a good time? And like 10 o'clock tomorrow.
I got to be someplace between like 10 and 11.
The fellow's got to be somewhere between 10 and 11.
Is 1 o'clock okay?
How about 1 o'clock?
Okay.
Okay, I'll give him the address. I've got it here. All righty. Thank you.
Yeah, good, very good.
Huh?
That's amazing. I told you one thing leads to the other.
She'll tell you about starting that nursing home. You know where the nursing home is?
Yeah, your wife was just saying to me.
Bay of Vista.
Well, no, I'm not. No, I haven't seen it. But I've been out in Bay of Vista.
Out in Bay of Vista. And,
it's on the left, and it's past the railroad track, and just keep on going until you get to it.
Yeah, it's on the left hand side.
Past the Bay of Vista Church I was speaking about.
Yeah, I've done that.
And you go on out, and you pass the Sarasota Christian School.
Yep.
And it's just beyond that.
Just before you get
to the Sarasota
Christian
School,
that's right.
So is this Mrs. Overholt? Mm-hmm. She might have some old quilts, too. She probably made quilts. I don't know. You can ask her about it.
Okay.
I think she's done some of that yet. I think Anna May said she is now.
Well, she might be. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But she just might have some nicer old ones than what we have here.
Well, again, it's not just the fact that they're old, but that, you know.
That you
know, it's from your family, and you've done them too. And I did the friendship one because I'm trying to read as fast as I can. And I knew they did that, and it was, you know, for your husband's people, but your people are in there too, so it's... Well, that's an example of your family's kinship.
Right.
In a material object is what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. Where does Mrs. Overholt live, sir?
Where does she live?
Yeah.
Give me her exact address. 5215 Bay of Vista.
What's her number since you're right there?
Her phone number is 371-6647. That's the first house after you pass the... That's right on the corner of Bay of Vista and Honoring. H-O-N-O-R-E.
H-O-N-O-R-E?
Yeah.
E is at the end. You want?
Where's your map? I'm sitting right on the map.
Yeah, because I think I've seen the road just... Here's... Greece, and they were saying that the holiday was May Day, so I went May the 1st, and nothing happened. So then I was talking to some people, and it turned out that when the May flower came up, for them that was May 1st. So it happened a few days later, and the flower came up, and sure enough, they had the event. But it was according to the ground, you know, and so the ground would change every day or so. And then that, see, I'm a school book person, so then when I went back in the books, I found out why there was an inconsistency in the written accounts. It's because all the book learning people were still going by, well, if it's May the 1st, that's when they do it, and if it's not May the 1st, then they're doing something wrong. But they were following the plants versus the calendar. So. And a lot of times when Greeks get together and they say what day this happened or what day that happened, or what day is the saint's day, they'll argue because their trades are different or their background is different. So that it'll, or they come from, you see, Greece is the north part of it is in the has like a middle European climate. The southern part has like North Africa. My Crete is just, it's got, you can grow bananas on Crete, you know, you can grow citrus on Crete, no problem at all. Blood oranges are all over Crete and stuff, and other citrus, grapefruit and stuff. And so, you know, when things happen agriculturally, it's a lot different. You know, and they also have two growing seasons all through Greece. It's just, you know, they're last different lengths.
Now, have you ever run on to Russian Mennonites?
No, sir. No. It makes, if they were in the Pale region, what they used to call the Pale, or old Ukraine, that all through there is like, that's all Germanic and Russian-speaking people. I know the Mennonites came, I guess the Amish people came initially from Switzerland, and then moved through
and
Germany.
France.
And
well, this,
France.
There is a sect of the, and I don't know where you'll find them, but there, mm-hmm. there is such a thing as Russian Mennonites.
Mm-hmm.
Are they here in the States? Canada.
I think there, yeah.
Canada you'll find them.
I think
Canada,
there's a lot of them in Canada. I don't know how about where there's any of them even down here more than
this.
When you were saying that they would plant even the gardens by like signs, what kind of signs was that? I mean, just for
what was the what are they called, the solar signs?
Yeah,
yes. The signs of when it's if you plant in this certain sign, why your potatoes will if you plant potatoes, the roots will bear more potatoes. You get more potatoes because you planted it at the right.
You got an almanac?
Or
the farmer's almanac.
A farmer's almanac.
Oh, we'll have the various signs of
Yeah,
the
various signs of so.
And then if you plant another time, that's the time when things go up out of the ground and produce. Or if you want to plant flowers, you plant it in a certain sign, and then your flowers will bloom more. I always said, I don't watch the signs. I plant my things in the ground. But I know my mother used to, and his mother used to, they used to plant things in the sign. And it was supposed to really help. We planted our potatoes. About the first year we were married, we planted potatoes in the sign. We also put them in the dirt, but we didn't get as many potatoes as we planted.
What potato
growing? We always laughed about that. You didn't get as many potatoes as you planted. My mother, when she planted flowers, she planted it in the, what they call a flower girl. I don't know what the sign is really called.
Flower curl?
Flower girl.
Flower girl?
Yeah. She called it flower girl. And she planted in that sign, and she could do anything. And pickles, you have to plant pickles at the right time. If you don't plant pickles at the right time, well then, you know, they don't produce. It just all goes in the plant.
Is there any relationship, you know, these various patterns for the quilts, you know, I was looking at some books, you know, and books aren't exactly always the best thing to look at when you want to find something out. Is there any relationship between the life that the people led and those kind of like, you know, patterns they would use?
Well,
did you ever hear stories about it?
Now, like that dark one there, those were colors they used because they didn't want to use colors that would get dirty quick. They watched that, and then a lot of times they used a lot of leftovers. And they probably used some leftovers. These were probably leftovers in here because.
One of the green bar.
Well, the most of them are alike in this one. I thought the one of them had some that weren't. Not
there over there. It probably got some.
Oh, this is this one that I made. This is all leftovers from materials that I made dresses out of and shirts for the little boys and whatever. But that's what they used to do is use leftover things. And one of these has. This one here has feedbacks, the feed sack back on it. They got feed in these bags that were all printed, but then they They took all the dye out of them.
Did you turn all of them their quilts for?
Yeah.
How did you know how old they were?
Well, I know when they were made and who they were given to, and that your mom had them before she was married.
They're not new.
No, apparently not.
And his mother used to use them. She used them too. But I didn't.
Yeah, I recall.
When she gave them to me, when she died, I got them, and I never used them because I thought she should be used. She had dishes too that she used. I said, you don't use them old dishes.
I slept under
them. I always. Well, don't you trouble at all. See, that's feed sack too on the back. They used to do that.
Yeah, it was too old.
Anything, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything that they could use.
Have
now,
you ever
some
heard
people
the song
died some of that, their material too. Now that was probably dyed. On the back, but probably had
Well,
which
a
one's
coat of many colors?
I've heard about that some, but I've never, it's like the coat I think that they used to hand down the family or...
Well, they were poor. The Pardons, the way I get it, were poor people.
Yeah.
I don't know the history that well, you know. But her mother made her a coat, and what she used was just
scrap
that
material
and put it together and made a coat for her to go to
saw
school
many
in.
Colors.
And now she's got a song out, a coat of many colors.
And she told her that, her mother told her that the story about, in the Bible, about, what was the
Joseph?
Boy? Joseph, yeah, and his coat. And that's what convinced her to wear it, because she said otherwise the children will make fun of her when she comes to school with this coat on, because it had all different kinds of colors on it. And her mother told her no, and told her the story from the Bible, and said that they're not going to make fun of her. And so she wore it, and then of course after she grew up, she made the song up and wrote it. But they did a lot of things like that. My parents, my mother did too. But
my mother now, as I was saying to you about crazy quilts,
mm-hmm.
My mother and I have sort of the same taste in the family. My brother's an architect, my sister's a pharmacist, and now she's going to go into law, so they're sort of kind of, you know, straight, kind of conventional stuff. So I saw my mom do these crazy quilts, and I thought they were great. You know, I got them all, I almost have all of them, you know. And somebody had given me an old coat, an old parka. And so I took it to my mom and I said, well, can you do something with this? And she said, fine. And she crazy quilted jean fabric on it. So some of the, and she put like pockets, you know, near my forearms, and then she did this and that. And they're all different colors because they were all different jeans. So I think that's a great coat, and I've got it. It's warm. You can't beat that coat. And it was a parka where the, you know, the down was coming out of. Once you sold that stuff over, boy, I could walk through a nuclear bomb and there was nothing, you know, nothing, no window, nothing comes through that coat, you know. So it's sort of startling when you see it, you know, but you know, if you don't mind that, you're all right.
So you're from Greece.
Well, I'm from...
Her and I traveled to Greece.
Is that right? When'd you go?
72.
Yeah, the junta was still a dictator. No, that was 74. Dictatorship was in 74.
We traveled Greece. Lebanon, we traveled to Egypt, we traveled to Syria.
Can't do that anymore.
No, hey, that we just did, we just got there in time. That wasn't, but, what was it, a year or so later? When
Israel,
we there
traveled out. So what's your religion?
Greek Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox. When the Catholic Church split away from the other ones, I'm the other ones.
Yeah.
And you guys come from after Luther split it off and
mm-hmm.
again. Yeah, when, I forget which presidential candidate was running sometime back, and a born-again person asked her what her religion was. She said she was born right the first time. She was Greek Orthodox. So I really always liked that lady, you know. Anderson, remember when Anderson was running as a offshoot candidate for president? Anderson, I think, was his name. And his wife was happened to be Greek Orthodox, and that's what she said. So I've always liked her. She was born right the first time. And I watch, sometimes when they have the preachers on TV, I pay attention because they use Greek words, you know, and they try to tell you what the Greek words mean. And, you know, some of that's right, and then some of it depends on when they're talking about. You know, they talk about, they'll use the word, and then, you know, that word, like any word, changes over time, you know. Like, if you say, or talking about that woman's name over here, Gaiman. Okay, well, when my mother was growing up, when you would say your heart was young and gay, that's okay. Now, if you... Now, were these like the rag rugs? How were they made?
You tear strips of material, you sew it together, and then I put them on these here shuttles.
Yeah.
And I put them through one way, then the other way, back and forth.
Yeah.
Push this thing in, made them kind of nice.
Did you have a loom in your house?
Yeah.
Do you still have that loom?
Upstairs.
Do you still have that loom?
No, I don't. I had to quit because of my back.
I'm sorry.
So I sold it.
Which one of your daughters did you give the last of your rugs to?
The one that has the store over, the one that I'm talking to, he's talking to.
The one that has the grocery store over here?
Uh-huh.
Does she live here in Sarasota?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, the reason I was telling you the story is that they were throwing them out in Greece. So I begged this woman almost on my knees to let me have one of the loom, you know, the ones with the looms. So I said, just please give me, you know, together. And she said, no, this is, you know, like she was embarrassed. She wanted to have, like, you know, manufactured carpeting. I talked her out of two of them. All right, she was to have 12 of them. She was cleaning her house because she made enough money with the family to buy new ones, you know. And like she threw them in the street, and she sent and they watched for the guy to come by to pick them up. And I tried to follow the garbage man, you know, to get the, and he wouldn't give them to me. These guys were like, you know, what do you want? You know, it's like I'm a garbage picker, or like they couldn't quite understand it. So I must be trying to make a lot of money. But I said, no. You know, it's like you don't understand. People don't make this anymore, right?
Yeah.
They said no. I also found out, and this is where I did get pieces of them. Was they would cut these up and they put them under the saddle, like a horse blanket. I don't know how else to say it, you know. So sometimes they take these things off and they're these multicolored things, you know. And I did have like a real problem with one of them. They were vegetable dyes, and I was living, you know, I don't have a lot of money. I was living in a trailer, and one time a trailer flooded, and I hid at the bottom of the the closet, you know, with the sliding doors, and it washed all the colors out of me. It go gray. See, so I lost. Like, I still have that one rug. As a matter of fact, I have it, I use it in the back of my truck. But it doesn't have that color anymore just because of that thing.
Well, see, with this kind of rug all the way through, I have it everywhere in the kitchen and every room, bathroom, everywhere.
Yeah.
So I don't need one. I got that little Oriental one at a store to put there. But I said, I don't need them. I had them put away. They were still brand new.
Yeah.
And our daughter, she likes old things too. And so when I had a garage sale here and get rid of some things, and then I had these on to sell, and then she said, well, she wouldn't mind having those, so I gave them to her.
Excellent.
And so that was the end of my rugs. But I and I also cut wool materials in about inch wide strips and braided them, and then